Amen. Thank you. Thank you, Knox. Hi, everyone. Good morning. Good to see you all again. Again, my name is Nathan Sutherland with Gospel Tech, and I'm excited to be here for this portion of the conversation. I did get three questions pre-entered from the, sounds like the book study time, so I want to jump into those. I'll read them out loud to you. And then if those spark something, or if you have other questions, either from the text itself that you guys have been working through, so Gospel Center Tech, where I know some of you have been doing a book study. Is this too intense, by the way? Am I echoing? Okay. All right. Or if there's just something that came to your mind. Otherwise, as Knox mentioned, a list of, it's like 23 questions that are frequently asked. I sent to him, he sent to a few others, and there's just kind of some highlighted, we'd like to hit these first. So, to start, I got the question of what's the difference between the light phone versus a gab phone or a bark phone? If you're not familiar with those, all three of those are dumb phones. So your smartphone does all the things and its goal is to give you apps. That's what an iPhone or an Android device wants to do. That's how they make a good portion of their money. So it's something like 60% of their income comes from the actual sale of the device. The other 40% of their income comes from selling things through apps, microtransactions, memberships, things like that. So a dumb phone does not have an app store. It frequently doesn't have a default browser. So you get something like a gab phone or a light phone or a bark phone. They start as just a brick that only does what it's supposed to do, make phone calls or send and receive texts. Something like a gab phone will not send or receive images, even though you can take pictures on it. So these are the, that's the category now of dumb phone. The main differences is a light phone, or like a Wyze phone would be another version of this. These are the hipster phones. So I want to look like a professional when I show up at my business meeting, but I don't want the internet on my device. The Wyze phone or a light phone will help you do that. They're very simplistic. You can actually download apps that allow you to have these simplistic, minimalistic launch apps. So they, you basically open your phone, and instead of showing you candy-colored apps, it's going to show you just like a list of map, calculator, text, and it's going to be grayscale. So that's your Wyze phone, light phone option. And then gab phone is meant for young people. So my fifth grade, my oldest son is fifth grade. He's going to be going into sixth grade. He's going to be starting doing sports that are at events that I'm not at. I'm going to just like drop him, or he's going to go with a friend. We're going to get to the spot where communication needs to happen. Hey, practice got moved, or it ended 20 minutes early and I'm just standing here. That's where a gab phone comes in, because it doesn't give them access to the internet or apps, but it allows them some of the digital flexibility we now kind of expect with regular living. Wonderful if you just want your child to have the experience of going, I know my parents love me. They will come pick me up, right? Like we all did that. The number of times Saturday morning wrestling practice wasn't there and I tried to chase my mom down, right? Downtown Puyallup at the old Callis Junior High. And then I just waited for 2 hours for her to come back for me. You can do that to your kid. They'll be fine. And if you want some flexibility, gab phone's a great way to just let them text you and be like, hey, coach didn't show. Can you come pick me up? However you want to handle that. But that's the gab phone. They have started gab phone and bark phone. Used to be that was gab, and then bark was, it defaults to the same thing, but it has smartphone capabilities and you can release one app at a time. Gab has now added that functionality to where, so what I mean by that is you start with a phone that only texts, it only does basic GPS, it only shows the little blue dot of where your child is with that device. Then you could release, like, my volleyball coach only communicates to us through WhatsApp. You can release just WhatsApp. Because if you have an iPhone and you say, hey, you can use everything that's under the age of X, you can use all the 12U apps, then you get all of those apps in the App Store. Whereas Gab and Bark say, no, you can just use WhatsApp, and just that app is now available to you. You can download it, you can use it. The main difference between a gab phone and a bark phone then is that bark has the opportunity to pay a monthly fee for their filtering, their accountability. They don't have a filtering function, it just simply watches everything that comes through, specifically what you search, and then the communication. These are the two strong ones for bark phones. So again,
is that spelled bark?
Bark, like a dog. And the idea is your child's going out to the cul-de-sac of the internet and you're gonna send a little digital dog with them. So the really unique part about Bark versus your average filtering software is it's not image-based. They're specifically watching searches and conversations. So if someone texts your child, nobody likes you, you'll get a notification of that. If someone texts a child, can you keep a secret? If someone texts your child, and this is my favorite part of Bark, something unsafe, so unsafe relationally or unsafe physically, like something bad's gonna happen at school tomorrow, your child is not required to report that. That automatically gets spotted and sent to the local police. And that nationally has been a really, really amazing part of Bark because kids don't always like to be narcs. We all were raised with the concept that snitches get stitches. And even when it's something big and scary, young people struggle with the social weight of going out and being the person to narc on them. So that Bark is nice because it no longer is your child's Fifth Amendment duty to worry about their self-incrimination. The app does that for them. So when my child gets their first functioning smartphone, or my children get their first functioning smartphones, they will get Bark on them. So that's the real big perk of having a Bark phone, is that's baked into your operating system. You can't start it in safe mode and get around that accountability. And it's specifically looking for bullies, predators, self-harm, drugs, like thing and general risk to others. Those are what are going to be coming across. I will say if you have all of their levels of sensitivity active, your like Christian music will get flagged because it talks a lot about death and blood. So just know that is, you're Christian. They'll be like, there's a lot of dying happening in your child's music recently. But like, there's no real way around that. It just will happen and you'll get to chortle about it and then move along. But they're meant to be talking points. And what I really like about Bark is it recognizes the digital independence your child has earned. I'm assuming you're getting your child a smartphone because he or she has shown some level of responsibility in real life. And you go, yes, I want you to extend that real life health you're showing me into digital spaces. We're not raising safe kids. We're raising healthy adults. Digital spaces is part of that. So then you don't have to read their digital journal all the time or know how fast they were driving on the freeway, because by the time you feel like you need that level of monitoring, they're probably not responsible enough to handle this level of trust. So Bark then is going, hey, I trust you, and when things go sideways, when unsafe strangers show up, when mean friends occur, when you're the mean friend, I will find out, and I won't just come drop the hammer. I'm going to come and approach you in love and say, hey, I've noticed. Seems like you and your friends are having some drama. What's going on here, right? What does the Lord say about this, about being a friend, about loving our neighbors and our enemies, about being right and gracious? Like, how do we handle these big conversations? Because that's more important than just using the right tech, is actually having the right attitude and the right heart as we process it. So light phone / wise phone, hipster adults who want a lower tech experience. Gab phone, great starter phone that now has some scalability built in, and the Bark phone, which comes with the ability for a monthly cost of accountability, specifically text-based, relational-based. That's where they're, this is like one of the three benefits of AI becoming a thing, is that Bark is really, really good at the text-based interpretation of what's happening and helping you engage your child and raise them well in a digital space. So those are the three phones. That was question one. Any follow-up questions on that? Anything I like to, yes?
All of these phones are incredibly, doesn't matter what phone, incredibly challenging to set up. Or it's just tedious to kind of monitor and decide all these things. I think one of the biggest deterrents that I've faced is that just seems really hard, it seems really complicated, I'm gonna have to stay on top of it. Can you just speak to the maybe the psychology behind what's going on in their minds and what's preventing us from taking these steps?
Yeah. It's fatigue, right? We have parenting fatigue in a digital world because there are thousands upon thousands of new ways for your child to make digital mistakes on a regular basis. And you constantly feel like you're having to swat away this, you know, swarm of mosquitoes that are trying to suck your child's blood. So that's why you're eventually like, I don't know. I don't feel like I can keep caring. I would encourage you, if you're in that spot where you're like, wow, this is just too much emotional energy, then that tech isn't an option for you. There is a threshold of emotional energy that it requires to parent in a digital space. Your only other option is just don't enter it, and that can be your answer. Be like, I don't have the energy to parent this well with you, so we're just not going to bring it in right now. Now, I don't know what your game plan is for parenting that well in the future, but it takes emotional energy for your child to own that technology. So they have to be willing to be up for these conversations as well, because what you can't do is just go, I don't know, here's an iPhone. We did that. We have an entire 10-year chunk of humans raised on that, and that's the most anxious generation that we've ever seen. The most educated, the least promiscuous, the least likely to use drugs. They're also the least likely on the male side to attend college, the least likely to be gainfully employed, and we have a whole lot of other issues for them. They're incredibly, incredibly anxious because we put them on the internet and said, go get them, Tiger. I lived through it. Let's see if you can. The internet I was raised with in the late 90s was not the internet. Your child's getting through the phone. Very different internet. So with that in mind, it does take a certain amount of emotional effort. There are low thresholds. I would say gab is your best bet for just getting a brick that your child can use for basic communication. The other things we might talk about, like I talk in my book about Griffin routers and like, what do you do about your Wi-Fi? Like, you might choose to just not have Wi-Fi. Your option is not put no safety measures on your Wi-Fi. It's not a good option. You can't just assume you have a good kid. I went to Cascade Christian. I was an ASB officer raised in church. I went to a Missouri Synod Lutheran church growing up. We were all about making sure you do the right things and making sure you never talk about them if you do the wrong thing. We always blamed it on grace, though. Like, God already forgave that. Don't bring it up. By the way, that's a terrible way to handle it. Please don't do that. This did not help me. But, like, we knew the rules in the right way, and I still managed with a 28-kilobyte modem. For context, if you had 1 megabit per second internet right now, which you would sue your company if you did, but if you did, you're 50 times faster than what I had growing up, okay? And I still managed Christian school, ASB, church that gave me the flipper fries talk a lot, managed to find pornography on purpose with a dial-up internet that told people I was getting on the internet, right? Like, there's no way to sneak this. It's not fast. It's a central computer. No one had laptops at this point. I'm telling you that because I experienced a childhood where I still made mistakes on purpose with all the support in the world as an active follower of Jesus. I loved Jesus, and I hated this mistake, and I would call it that. I knew what it was going in. Eyes open. Still managed to make those choices at the speed of a snail in a central location. And I'm telling you that because if you don't have the emotional energy to parent the tech you're offering your child will be curious, will make a mistake, and will not know what to do about it, and it's way more accessible than it was for me. So I'm telling you that because it will take a certain amount. If you're bringing tech into your home, you have to be willing to parent it, and it will cost something. You already bought the device. I like to talk about phones on the digital highway, like these are cars, so you already bought the vehicle that can do the damage. Please don't skip on the seatbelt and the airbags. There's going to be some install, because these don't come with them. Now, I hope one day in the near future, they will just come defaulting to child levels of safety. It does not. There is no children's internet. The latest meta release of children's social media has been a farce. It completely failed. And as one of these questions referenced, but what about Roblox? Roblox is a perfect example of why the internet is not safe for children. Because as soon as you make it safe enough to draw children, you draw all the people looking for children. And they look a lot like children on the internet. Right? It's not like a park. We're like, hey, where's your kid? Right? Like, you can't do that on the internet. It's much more difficult to find them. And so we are running into the need for a certain amount of emotional investment. So pick a low-hanging fruit, something like a gab phone. Pick something very simple. So in our family, we don't currently have video games because of my issues with gaming safely. I was a compulsive gamer, so we don't have video games in the home. We play games. Kids play games at other people's houses. I haven't played a game since May 15th, 2011, in case you were wondering. We don't have a TV in the house. This is my personal preference. I was raised without a TV. And so we have a TV outside our house in this weird patio thing because we just moved. I'm like, sure, that's not in our house. We can do it there. And it's fine. Like, we get a subscription like 3 months a year to watch sports we want. So March Madness, the Olympics, and maybe baseball. Actually, it will be baseball tomorrow because my oldest was like, when can I watch more baseball? And I was like, when you finish. And today's his last game. They got to like one of those playoff things. And they won last night. So tomorrow, apparently, I get baseball. Outside, it works for us. We watch shows on a laptop. Friday night movie nights on a laptop. It turns out, if you stare at it long enough, it feels like a big screen. You just need, like, it's weird, right? Like, it's only the first, like, 45 seconds that you realize it's small. And then you look up and you're like, wow, it's been an hour and a half. So that's worked for us. That's not for you. My wife actually judges us that this is how we do it. We are not a house united on this concept. But when you have my day job, it does add some sway. But that is what I would just encourage as we think about this, is how are we going to make tech as minimally invasive to the positive parts of our home and as maximally bringing additional value and weight to the good things that we are doing. Thank you for your question. Second question that was asked from the book study time is research on. Now, this may not hit the full group. I was like, this almost feels like I should have a one-on-one with this person, but the question is research on immersive board game / role-playing games, such as Dungeons & Dragons or Magic the Gathering, or similar impact versus screens. Love that question. Short version is no, they're not the same, even though you can be unhealthy with both. And I'll take this from the screens. Games are designed starting with Halo. Was the first game that had a behavioral psychologist on the team. So they were a paid part of staff. Prior to that, they'd gone to people like, hey, what do you think about if we do the game design in this way? And they're like, oh, we like that. Think about these other things. And then they would run off and do it. Halo was the first game with a game behavioral scientist on their team. If you don't know what that means, and you've never played Halo, allow me to introduce you. Prior to Halo, video games where you enter a game, you start a level, and you play the level. You defeat the level, and then you generally stop and have some kind of second thing. There's generally, like Mario Brothers is broken into worlds with little sub-levels, or sometimes it's just one massive world, and you play through it progressively through bosses till you've defeated the game. Halo starts with a guy named Master Chief. You land on a planet, defeat the bad alien guys, and proceed one seamless story. I played it the first time with a buddy my senior year of high school, and it was like 2 a.m. I'm like, when do we beat this level? We've been playing for like 5 straight hours, just alternating. You die, the other guy gets the controller, and we keep going. And then we realized we're like 2/3 of the way through the game. For those of you who know, we had just gotten to the swarm, and our minds exploded. Okay, it was a pivotal point in my entertainment experience, part of the reason I no longer get to play games. But behavioral scientists have said, hey, if we never make them click the next level, they'll never walk away. That's human psychology. It's the same reason Netflix gives you 10 seconds to find your controller before it just plays the next show. Human psychology says that about second 3 left, you're going to go, I've got 30 more minutes. Right? If the show starts before you find the remote, you're probably watching the next episode. That's human behavioral psychology. They know what makes you tick, and then they can make you want to tick a certain way. So this is your hitboxes in a video game. If they shoot at you and it misses, it makes a different sound and vibration than if you make a solid contact. That is human psychology. You want instant feedback that you're doing the right or the wrong thing, and you are learning the correct way to play this game. And it's going to be different than the other games. The reason I bring all that up is board games don't do that. They don't. They're still psychology involved in the leveling and the way the system works. Something like Dungeons & Dragons used to be a much more organic experience of people just telling stories, and the rules were like whatever the person feels like saying happens next. And it's much more structured now. There's entire books and annals on how to play correctly in the worlds you go into. And I think that is where you will watch some of the board games be unhealthy. It's not from the compulsive playing overstimulation, I need to feel good on my terms right now side. It's the I could run away from my life forever because this game has a limitless amount of complexity because Dungeons & Dragons has been around, like, we're coming up on 50 years of people investing their hearts and minds, creativity. There's some really cool stuff in there in terms of, like, storytelling. There's also some really dark stuff. So if you haven't seen Dungeons & Dragons recently, it gets dark in a hurry, and that's just like part of the lore now. So, for example, in my gaming experience, I quit playing video games, like, what do I do with my time? Started picking up board games, so Settlers of Catan, Ticket to Ride, Carcassonne, basic games that people really enjoy. If you've never played any of them, please do, they're wonderful. And I had some friends, and I'd always been like, hey, we're not gonna play Dungeons and Dragons because that tickles some part of my brain that's like, let's not live in reality. So I had a buddy who's God's gift to storytelling, and he found a Star Wars game. And instead of being stats and sheets and lore, it's a little bit, you roll these dice, and it just tells you if you failed or succeeded, and then you have to tell him what happens next. which is a hoot. And my job is always to break his story. I'm like, you came with a story prepared. I'm going to see what I can do to like just completely blow that up. He had this beautiful, he like came over, he's like, this is going to be like 6 hours of like rolling dice and talking to one another. Not overstimulating though, please note. I'm like, this is great. We never left the like entry area. Like I just immediately started breaking things because it's a story and you're collaboratively telling it, right? Then I brought my two sons in and they did the same thing. I ended up playing as a Wookiee. And at the end of this round, had lederhosen shaved into my Wookiee fur. Like, this is what my sons did to me. So, if that doesn't make any sense to you, just know, it's a hoot. But there absolutely can be unhealthy aspects to collaborative storytelling games. You can escape to that world. There can be so many rules and settings and just details that you can think about at every moment you're not playing it. That can be unhealthy, but it's not the same as a video game, which is designed for engagement, which is designed to move you through an experience that makes you want to stay. And the most compelling example of that, I don't think I talked about it last time, is Call of Duty. Anyone here ever played Call of Duty or know someone who's played Call of Duty? All right, okay. So Call of Duty is a first-person shooter. So you're behind the gun playing this game. Military simulator that has expanded. And they have made something called prestige classes. And this is every behavioral scientist's dream boat. Prestige classes are, we've made a game, it takes about 11 hours to beat. There's also a multiplayer version. We want you to stay in this game because you have to pay a subscription to play multiplayer, and this is part of our revenue format. So we make prestige classes. That means you played our game for 11 hours and you beat it, congratulations. Go play multiplayer. Like, yeah, but I got bored. Okay. 10 prestige classes. The first 9, what you do is you level up 1 to 50. You then cash that in and become prestige class 1. You go back to level 0. And you now get some little perk, a special skin, something you wear, or a different look for your gun, or some ability that you can now unlock and use in multiplayer. You now redo the multiplayer 1 through 50 levels in order to unlock prestige class 2. Each time takes the 11 to 15 hours that the entire game took to beat, but you're now doing it on loop. And you meet anyone who's played Call of Duty and decided prestige classes matter and ask them, have you ever played Call of Duty when it was no longer fun? This is a game, by the way. 100% of Call of Duty players who have done prestige class pursuit will say, yes, I have played Call of Duty when it was no longer fun. You ask why, and they'll go, because I was already so far in. Now, that's a sunk cost fallacy. That's not a reason to do something, but it works because it's human psychology. And prestige classes are incredibly sticky. And people will play the game for hundreds of hours beyond it being fun or even having a purpose like beating the game because they have this goal set before them. And don't worry, prestige class 10 in the current version takes you the entire amount of time of the previous 9 levels. So something like 150 hours of gameplay to get prestige class 10. Don't worry, they let you get it in little chunks. It's like 1,000 levels to get prestige class 10. They give you to it 100 at a time. But the idea of thinking about video game engagement versus board game engagement is that it's incredibly fast feedback. It's designed by professionals in a world that was designed by some of the best artists, storytellers, game creators on the planet, right? The people that would have been designing the temple are now making video games, right? Getting hundreds of millions of dollars from trillion-dollar companies to make sure this is exciting. And that's why you're seeing the rise in female gamers. We're almost at a 50-50 point in terms of basic play. I mean, sort of. It includes moms playing Candy Crush at soccer practice. Like, I don't know that that's the same as playing Call of Duty, but if you look at Call of Duty players, it's still 90-some-odd percent male. If you look at core gamers, people playing more than 20 hours a week, it's well over 60-70% male. So we're still seeing a vast majority of the drive in the gaming community on the masculine male side. But yeah, they are both gaming. Board games and video games are not the same, but the content can be concerning for different reasons. Where your heart's going, your purpose in playing, and what you are trying to get out of it. So I know people who are only play board games and are less healthy than people that only play video games, if that makes sense. But that's because of where they're their heart posture is and how they're wired. Yes. Right.
You lost me somewhere in board games.
Probably in Wookiees, yeah.
So you're saying, like, Call of Duty is just just a board game. It's not something they do online.
Call of Duty is a video game that has behavioral psychologists working, and those prestige classes are an example of how a behavior psychologist can go, well, the game only takes you 11 hours, but how can I get 1,000? And then they have a very successful loop. And next year when Call of Duty comes out again, instead of making a new game, they make a mildly interesting storyline, reskin all of their characters to look different, reskin all of their guns to look different, and then release effectively the same game.
So are you saying that this is a really good game for kids?
No. I have officially failed. I apologize. And that's my job to communicate clearer.
Yeah.
I will recap.
I need to read it, I think. Is this all in your book?
Parts of it are, yes. All the important parts of what I just said are in my book.
So is there a good... this is a board game, right?
Video game. Yep.
Okay. Well, when you were talking about board games...
Yes. Nope, that's, again, this is my job to communicate clearly. That's not you, that's me.
Well, you're communicating quickly.
Which was not my job. My job was to communicate clearly, and I have failed. Can I recap?
Yeah.
Board games can be unhealthy based on their content and our heart attitudes. Video games, by and large, are designed to be unhealthy by very smart people that know how we tick. So that's the main difference. Board games often, because there's so little money in them, are just designed by people that are passionate about a thing and they want you to have this experience with them. They're gonna make it really engaging because it's fun, but it's really hard to overplay a board game. They're hard to overplay by ourselves. They're hard to overplay because we fatigue out, and it's like, even if you're rolling dice and really engaged, like 6 hours later, you feel like you were just in school all day. Like your brain feels like jelly. 6 hours of a really exciting video game feels like you took a drug, right? Like your body is shaking, your brain is 1,000 miles an hour, there's no way you could lay down and fall asleep. The board game, you might have fallen asleep in the middle, right? People had to nudge you like, it's your turn. So that's the main difference between board games and video games. Right. Why wouldn't you? I mean...
I wouldn't.
I mean, that sounds like a challenge. Good thing it's not 2015. Yeah.
So, I remember... This just reminds me of a distinction you make in one of your podcasts. By the way, Nate has an excellent weekly podcast.
I do. Yeah, thank you for asking that. That you'll be paid your money afterwards. the analog adventures and digital adventures, the idea of fun at the pace of real life versus fun at a frenetic pace. We do that, again, our house is a little different because Dad can't have video games in the house. So that changes it. But we really try to find, I guess there's threefold. It's first, is the tech we bring in safe? And is our kid ready, and is the fruit good? And we just have that communication on loop. So is it safe? The safest tech you're going to find is going to be tech that helps us create, what we call tool tech in the book. So we're going to bring in creative tech, things that have no hooks or strings attached that help us do what we want to do. Microsoft Word would be your best example. And on the consumption side, the drool tech side would be something like Duolingo. It helps you accomplish a task, but it has tons of behavioral hooks. So things like levels, things like points, things like punishments if you don't do what they say in a timeline. Things like manipulative emails if you don't show up for 3 weeks. They're like, well, we can tell that you just don't want this. Right? Like, that's behavioral design. So just note that. Duolingo's great, and they're going to try to guilt you into coming back. Like, if you've ever felt bad for letting down an AI, Duolingo was probably the one to do that. So that's safe tech is going to be tool tech. It's going to have some kind of accountability like a bark phone. You're going to know what's happening. It's not going to have a web browser, and it's not going to have an app store. That's your safest tech, okay? So, I mean, you might have a children's book that you open up and read, and it plays music, right? That's tech, but that's not dangerous. There's no portal to the internet through that. A bark phone, fully locked down, or a Gab phone without a browser or an app store. These are safe, basic levels of technological independence. And then it scales from there, and we all pick and choose risks. You allow your child to play sports that involve risks. My fifth, soon-to-be sixth grader really wants to play tackle football, and he's, well, he's got my genetic lineage, so he's like 90 pounds dripping wet. And I'm like, ooh, I don't know about that one, son. Maybe flag football next year, right? But like, there's calculated risks we take in everything we do, and digitally, that's the same thing. So that's the first part of like, how do we pick what tech we're bringing in on the digital side? Is it safe? Are they ready? Have they been faithful in little things? I like the reset conversation. That's from the book as well. Relationships, emotions, sleep, enjoyment, time. Are they doing well in these? In an analog place. If they are, then maybe we can extend this. So my children have the opportunity to play video games when they go to some friends' houses. It's always for a short amount of time, and I get to have the awkward conversation with those parents. Like, hey, we don't play video games, but they can play that one. So they play Mario Kart. You've ever played Mario Kart, and we're not going to go over 30 minutes. And it's great. They play with their friends. They really enjoy it. It extends those friendships. It does not suck them into a vortex where this is the only spot they have friends now, is when they show up in this queue with these friends in this game. Because the problem with that is that's often the only thing those friends want to do. And if you go, hey, I still want to play video games, but can we play this game? They'll say, no, just tell us when you're ready to join our squad again. That's not a friendship. So as we talk to our people about analog versus digital experiences, friendship is important. There's three parts of being a friend. A friend needs to be someone who's an equal, which means you both get say. They're of equal value. You don't worship them, and they're not subservient to you, right? They're an equal. That's the first thing you need to have a friend. The second is you need to be a priority to this friend. Not the center of their universe, but they need to say no to something to say yes to you. You're a priority. They only have 24 hours in the day, same as everyone else. So they're going to say no to something. To be a friend, they have to say no to something to say yes to you at some point. And then third and finally, you need to share real-world experiences. Be that you're on a sports team or you go to the same school, you go to the same church, like you do need to know each other in real life, because digital-only friends, I know you can find me an internet version of someone who's like, yeah, but this one time, I get it. If I had all the times that this one time worked, we would be doing a lot of very dangerous things. We're not. So the one time is not what we're running off. Majority of the time, what we see is that if you run into a real-world crisis, your digital friends just aren't capable of being there for you. You find out someone gets a bad diagnosis, that digital friend may not even be in the same time zone to worry about it with you in real time. So we need those real-world experiences shared with real-world friends that we're a priority for and that are of equal value. We're on equal standing with one another. And then we can take that into digital space and recognize that this is also why in digital spaces after the age of 14 is when we start to enter digital friendships. So I want to be on social media. Great. We're probably talking 16, but you can do FaceTime before that. And the idea there is we're trying to build in relational norms. Through 14 is where your kid is figuring out what it even means to be a friend, to have a friend, to build relationships. So analog adventures are how do we build adventures that build on the safest tech we've got and on building real-world friendships and opportunities. What Jonathan Haidt in the book, Anxious Generation, says demands risk, responsibility, and free play. And we talked a little bit about that here in our last conversation. But I'm not going to tell you got to, you know, put toothpicks in the end of your Nerf darts like my sons did in that picture. But I am saying you do need to find ways to take appropriate levels of risk to build those real-world relationships and that free play. So I mentioned my oldest is finishing up baseball today. That's not free play. That's like as structured as you can get. There's an ump. There's two sets of coaches. There's so many rules. I just learned yesterday. So batter's in the box, kid's running home, you have to get out of the box. Batter's in the box, kid's running to third. You can stay there as long as you don't move. What? What are these rules? Who made that rule? Right? Like, there's so many rules. So that is not free play. It's still good. There's still real-world relationships. And then my son has four little buddies on the team. Then they'll run away and come home and they'll just play pickup ball in the backyard or in the front yard or whatever. That's free play. Still the same sport, but there's no umps and rules, and it's like Calvin ball. They're just making up rules all the time, right? They're like, no, you got to run counterclockwise because it's a Tuesday. Like, they do all that, and that's great. That's the point of free play, is you're making up rules, you're building on each other's rules. That's actually really valuable for the psychological development of your child and also for society when they learn that, like, rules are human things we agree to. Like, we all have to agree to these rules, please. Like, the Constitution carries no value in itself. It's because people think it has value. I digress. Society needs kids that understand that humans form agreements, and free play helps them do that. So, analog adventures help with that. It's a wonderful way to engage your kid, and whether it's camping or going on a walk after dinner with your family, there's always ways to build fun at the pace of real life. And board games would be one way to do that, too. I saw a hand. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. It's a great question. My wife is working on one. I won't even tell you the title, but I know it's being worked on. But I hadn't thought about the friendship. I don't believe the friendship part is in there. That's, yeah, thank you. I'll pray on that. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, and I think I would take this from two sides. So feeling behind is rough. No one enjoys that. I think I would ask the behind what, because you're going to get a different answer. And I found the behind what super important, because sometimes, like, well, I'm behind digital freedom. And they're like, ooh, fascinating answer. Like, let's talk more about what you mean by that. What do you mean by digital freedom? I want to be able to do what I want, talk to who I want, and see what I want anytime I want. Be like, yeah, that's not a good decision for anybody. Right? Like, that's a terrible life choice. So no, like, that's not my goal for you. When you're turn 18, my goal is not for you to be able to get a smartphone, no accountability, and just run off into the sunset because you've got it from here. Like, that's never the way we should live life. That's not the way I live life. This is my smartphone. I'm going to log into it for you. First of all, you'll notice that it's grayscale because ADD. But then also, you would notice that there's no app store. I have parental controls set on my phone. I set them and then had someone else set the code because I like making good decisions. There's one browser. It's Safari. It has covenant eyes because two people who care about me will see everything that I see on this phone. 99.5% of a year, I like making good choices. And 0.5%, I'm like, you know what? It's never, by the way, 0.5 straight. It's like 2 to 3 hour chunks of my life where I'm like, but maybe I should just do something really dumb, and you can. There's no stopping me on my own personal device. But two people who care about me will also know that I did that. And that's a nice little self-check, right? To put just a little bit of a buffer. Think about the number of things we wouldn't have done in life if someone else had been in the room. Like when my high schoolers go, but we don't have enough self-control. We love the Lord. We just wish we had more self-control. They can. Bring her father on the next date. Self-control just baked right into the situation. It's great. That's what we're trying to do digitally. So when you ask, hey, I feel like I'm being left behind, ask why. Because there are young people who are showing a healthy reset, who are showing a heart for the Lord, who simply want the opportunity to engage their friends, who want to be able to be a part of the space their friends are, and their friends are in those digital spaces. So you would then have that calculated conversation of, all right, what's our level of risk we're willing to do? How much danger are we willing to bring into this situation? I will tell you that by the time that child graduates and goes to college, life becomes less about belonging in this friend group that seems super important and more about accomplishing the goals they have for their own life. I have a lot of 20-somethings who are doing what I did to my phone, getting rid of all their apps, getting rid of all their social media, locking down their store because they want their phone to only do what they tell it to do. They're done with being told what's important. And they want their tech to just listen to them. I had a young man delete his Instagram. He's 23. He's training to be a pilot. was like, why'd you delete your Instagram? Because I thought I knew. And he's like, because I don't know how to tell a story. And I was like, oh, that wasn't what I expected. Like, I thought I was clever here. I've heard this conversation a lot. It's like, I'm sorry, what do you mean by that? And he's like, I've lived so much of my life in other people's lives, I don't know how to talk about my own. So he deleted social media so that he could retell his story. I also had a young man in a different state who told me that his parents were mean for not giving him social media. And I was like, okay, like, you seem to want it. This seems to be going well. Let's talk to your parents. His mom goes, no, we did give him social media. He committed a felony. He failed to mention that. And then his mother, very graciously, we were walking this through, and I was like, is that true? He's like, right? Like, okay. So mom eventually goes, you can use the social media you want, but you can use it on my device. And his words in front of me were, I would rather not have it. And that could be arranged, right? Like, we can do that. So I would not say the goal is to fit in, or the goal is to have all the tech all your friends have, because some of your friends have a dangerous amount of tech, and if you're watching the early 20-somethings start their families and parent them, that decade of humans that we raised on iPads is the most locked down with their technology. Actually, there was just a recent study that Jonathan Haidt highlighted in a recent blog, but the study was all of the 24 to 32-year-olds who are parenting right now are like, yeah, no. Like, we're going tech-free. Like, I'll use my phone and no Wi-Fi in our house. Like, they are the most backswing from an age where we just put kids in front of screens and let them get parented by the internet. And I'm not going to say that's good. What we are seeing is a reaction to them recognizing this was unhealthy. So, you have a high schooler, or you are a high schooler, and you're like, man, I just feel left out. I would ask, do you feel left out of all the mistakes you really want to make at the speed of light, and your mom's so mean for not letting you have, you know, endless amounts of felonies? Or are you just, you love the Lord and you're trusting Jesus, and there's things you just can't participate in, sports or otherwise, because you don't have access to it, using it through a parent's device, using it through a bark phone where everything has a loving adult to help you process some of the trauma that will happen on the internet? Or do you just feel the pull of wanting to belong and be on the in crowd and not have people make fun of you when they go, hey, get this app, we're all playing this game, and you're like, yeah, I don't have a phone. If that's the case, always blame your parents. Right? You blame them when you have to leave the party early. You blame them when you don't have your phone. Be like, my parents are super lame and they told me I can't have one. Everyone's like, oh, parents, right? Like, fine, that's great. You don't have to like take some big moral stance on this and prove to your friends that phones are a horrible idea for their developing brains. You can just go, my parents are the worst, but I'm probably going to be a success. So leave that part quiet. You don't have to say that out loud. But I would challenge you to think about, where are you on those three? I think in the middle lane, there's absolutely a spot to go to your parents and say, hey, I've been faithful in the little things. This is important to me, because if your child is 16, has been healthy in a reset and faithful in little things, and has asked for the opportunity, there's absolutely a way to say yes to that. I'm not going to say yes to everything they ask, but there's a way to find a yes that respects their independence, even if it's something that you didn't want for them. They're asking for this. They've proven they're faithful. Give them that opportunity, because we do want them to flex some of those digital muscles. You do have to have accountability on that, because if and when something goes sideways, you must be there for the follow-up conversation to know, how do we handle trauma, mistakes, problems that come up? Because, and I feel bad throwing this out there, but I'm going to do it. We don't have time to deal with it. There will be, in your young person's life, I mentioned I was a Christian making mistakes on purpose in a digital space. You will wonder, but I made the mistake and I knew it was wrong and I already knew Jesus. Therefore, did I not love him already so I wasn't saved, or have I committed the unforgivable sin so I'm not saved? They will ask this. It might sound trite to you, but 100% of young people who make a repeated mistake on purpose will ask this. And the premise is that whole 2 Timothy piece of, if I am faithless, he is faithful, Peter. But if I deny him, he will deny me, Judas. Your child will be asked, at least by the accuser, if not by their own flesh, am I Judas or am I Peter? Did I betray Jesus because I hate him and I'm serving my own kingdom? Or am I just weak in my flesh and I love him and I need him to come and ask me, do you love me more than these? That's really what we're trying to do with the phone thing. And I think if you communicate that clearly to your high schooler and say, hey, I love you and I want to give you all the good stuff, all the stuff that produces good fruit. Love and joy and peace and patience and kindness and goodness and faithfulness and gentleness and self-control. Will this help us do that? And if so, how? Galatians 5:19 through 21 is your counter to that, with the anger and the lust and the dissension and the envy and the jealousy. So you bring those up, have it be a conversation. I would say find a way to say yes, and then be very clear when it goes sideways to go, hey, listen, I'm not mad at you, and here's where this is going wrong. Like, I would encourage you strongly to think about not doing this. We're going to take a break. We're going to bring it back slowly, maybe with more accountability, maybe with more restrictions, because the goal is when they turn 18, they know their limits, they know their goals, and their tech reflects that, not drives that. We want their tech to do what they say, not tell them what to do. Okay, and that's, I mean, we have a service starting here in a minute. Do I have time still? How many? 45. Ah, we got 12. We're going to use them all. Yeah.
So you mentioned boys being particularly drawn into gaming.
Yes.
And obviously, we're not actually significantly boys, although not entirely. Do you think that sort of the gap that we're seeing amongst young men versus young women in like their 20s, obviously, college, even salaries now in the 20s, where women are significantly outperforming young men. Do you think a lot of that can be attributed to kind of going down the gaming holes and getting sucked into both gaming and pornography, and what otherwise would have gone into other endeavors sort of got vacuumed up with those things that we're really talking about?
That's a really interesting premise. I think knee-jerk, right, is yes, of course, we can see them sitting there doing nothing, and therefore that's why the world is the way it is. My concern would be most of those screen kids who have lots of games of that cohort, that's kind of who's getting vacuumed up by the 4 major tech companies in our area. And they're like, what's that? You love screens and isolation and, you know, putting in long hours? Come work for our company. I will pay you very well. And so we are seeing a lot of those people go into tech fields. I would not say that that's a good thing. I know a lot of very unhealthy tech workers who have a huge binge and purge work cycle where they will game a lot and then code a lot and then rinse and repeat, and it's not conducive for family life or their personal well-being. It's very much a you gained the world and lost your soul kind of endeavor. But I don't think that that's reflected in those metrics you're seeing. I would say, and I'd be willing to say this much of it, video games and pornography ring the same bell, instant gratification. You can feel, in fact, I would go so far as to say, and we have the question, so I'm responding to the prompt, that video games are adventure porn. That they are the feeling of success with no investment. Just like pornography is the feeling of intimacy with no vulnerability. And I would say that there is absolutely a danger there, and that we see it the younger that either of those are introduced in high scale, the worse the outcome tends to be. So am I saying that sociologically, society, men are declining because of the introduction of video games and pornography? No, because video games have been around long enough before we've seen what we're currently seeing. Young men are a trick. When you give them instant gratification and instant feelings of success, they do lose motivation. Do we see that happen in young men? Yes. We see it actually at a clinical diagnosable addiction level, specifically for video games and for pornography, even though you can't die from quitting them. The concept of addiction, to paraphrase it, is if you give up what you need to get what you want. If you give up what you need, your family, your friends, your future, your income, your sleep, your physical health, to get to something you want, that is an addiction, even if it's pornography or video games. So I would not say one-to-one, because then the answer to that would be, well, just remove them and your kid will be fine. And that is not actually proving to be true. What we're seeing is something deeper. We are actually seeing a lack of character and a lack of purpose. We're seeing young people who don't know why they exist and why it should matter, which is why we're gospel tech and not just better tech. Because the gospel says, well, you're a sinner in need of a savior, and that at your core is the problem. So you can go and do tons of good works and make a really good income and go to hell and not have a purpose and not live out God's days for you. You could go and serve the masses as a missionary with the wrong heart, because you think you're God's gift to these people rather than God is the gift to these people. And so I think at the end of the day, our conversation about technology specifically and our young men specifically, which is a conversation I'm very passionate about, is the young men side of how do we help young men achieve their full potential in Christ? And I truly believe it's point them back to their purpose in Christ, which is to love God with all their heart, soul, mind, and strength. You want to play that game? Let's talk about how does this develop our heart? Where is your joy coming from? If you're playing this game because it brings you joy with others, cool. If you need this game to be okay, I have concerns now. Love God with all you are and then do everything that helps. What's the Augustine? Love God with all you are and then do as you will. It's often misquoted. It's actually not Augustine anyway, but we'll get there. The premise being, if I love God with everything, I'm going to want to do things that help me love him more. And I'm going to dislike and hate the things that distract me from him. So that's first, love our neighbors as ourselves, actively serving them. The James 2:14 command of like, show your faith with your works. That includes the works of our devices. Our search history should show our faith. Our tech use should show our faith. Our bank accounts should show our faith. And we're going to raise up our young men to do that. And maybe that means get out in nature, because it's hard to experience awe and amazement at a grand scale if you're not outside of yourself, if you're constantly living in worlds made by men. I mean, and women, but men in the historic sense of humanity. The idea is that technology is amazing and you're always working with other people's rules. In nature, you're forced to ask some questions about yourself and your scale. I mean, just go walk through Washington, what's it called? Rainier National Park, forgot there for a second, and go around some trees and you're like, so this tree started growing 450 years before America was founded, right? Like that's the scale your brain has to wrestle with and realize that you're just dust in the wind. Like nature is very, very good at putting you in your place. Think about distances in space. My 9-year-old loves thinking about space and like distances between. He'd be like, so how long would I have to travel at the speed of light to get there? Like, right. Let's talk about the speed of light for a minute, buddy. Like how many trillion miles an hour is that? It is a really important piece to get into nature, and I wouldn't blame tech for the decline of men. I actually think part of those stats are explained by the rise of education for women. So they're saying, like, look at the percentage of women. That's where a lot of the stats are. Like, men are such a small percentage, but that's because the percentage of women going to college and achieving at a high level is exploding exponentially. I mean, just in the last 20 years, we've really introduced young girls to STEM as an expectation of, like, of course you can do math, technology, engineering, and science. And turns out they do at a really high level. So I think there's some of that too, where those numbers are a little bit skewed because girls were introduced to it in the last 2 decades, have exploded in the field, and now are taking positions that boys would generally have because they're scoring better. And not because the boys are distracted by pornography and video games, because the boys just can't hang. So there is some of that as well. That's academics, right? Like, boys, you have a physical advantage in combat hand-to-hand, but like, book learning, it's not always the case. Some of us need to pace and read at the same time, right? Like sitting and learning is not our strong suit biologically. So I would not say porn and video games are the problem. I would say they are a problem. They are never a net gain for young developing boys or girls, but boys tend to be where it's landing right now. And that society's problems is rooted in our purpose, our spiritual purpose in Christ acted out through. Oh, I didn't say the third. Love God with all you are, love your neighbors as yourself, and then help others do the same. Discipling. That's where church comes in. That's where helping young people get leadership positions and recognize what sharing the gospel looks like, because that's the Great Commission, and then you'll do it in whatever format the Lord's put you in. Some of you, for the tech companies, I'll end this thought on this. I was at one of the big four in this area, so a trillion-dollar tech company, in the building. Wow, that was a Freudian slip. But it did feel like I was in the belly of the beast. We were in an office, and a VP of one of their major vertical categories for technology, Jesus lover. And he's like, I'm about to move on. He'd spent 25 years with the company, so if you think of how long major tech companies have been around, this guy's been there a very long time. And his final act of being a Jesus follower was to get monogrammed Bibles and hand them out to every senior VP in the company. He had a stack of them. He's like, I'm doing it today. I'm like, that's nuts. We should pray about this. And Just know that every senior VP of one of the major four tech companies has received a monogram Bible, meaning they can't give it away. They can only throw it away. And people are super superstitious about throwing away spiritual documents, even if they don't believe in it, right? Like, they're just going to let that set somewhere and just percolate, right? Like, there's very little chance of throwing that in a bin on the way out. Like, you got to be hard to do that. So there are people the Lord has planted in major companies in this area where you would assume this is the worst of the worst happening because of the outcomes. There are some loving people who love Jesus, and he is using them for kingdom work there. Maybe some of those people will be your children. The premise, though, is that they need to be Christ followers first and then tech employees, not in reverse. So there is great hope. The Lord is doing good things, and thank you for that question. I hope my circumnavigating the answer was helpful. All right. We have 3 minutes. I told you we're using all of them. There's one more question on this piece of paper. Okay. It was height encourages unstructured, unsupervised time with peers. Can this be met in sports, youth group, or trail life? Sort of. So again, it's risk, responsibility, and free play. And free play means no adult supervision. Trail life is incredible and highly supervised. Youth group, again, incredible. Adults making the games, running the games, delivering the message. And sports, super fun and awesome. And adults all over the place. So while those are great places to make your friends or meet your friends, like we can have a collaborative, there's always a need for actual free play. Get them a safe place where they can have analog adventures without your intervention. So this could be examples that we do. So we have front yard, backyard play. We have a trampoline, which is why all our neighbors assume we're Mormon. if you're involved in Instagram at all and have a trampoline, they're like, Mormon, right? They're like, no. But those are two free play. We have gotten a spot where we have some neighbor kids that come over. We have walking distance from neighbors' houses. So we come over, we have like a little half cul-de-sac in front of our yard, and we allow free play. Like, we're not going to be out front watching you. There's a road. You know what a car looks like. Like, stay away from the cars. So there's a risk to that. Maybe you're not ready for that. You go with the backyard only. Maybe you pick a room in your house, and you're going to set it up and say, you kids can play in here because you're 4 to 6. Free play is still a thing for those children. In fact, going all the way down to 2, your child needs to learn how to self-soothe, how to have fun by him or herself without looking at your face for affirmation. Wonderful to affirm your child, and wonderful to walk around the corner and set a timer for 5 minutes and not check. Safe space, nothing they can pull on themselves. Like, don't be dangerous. We're not playing frog around the freeway. But no, structured, specific areas, school, sports, organizations like Boy Scouts, Girl Scouts, Trail Life, do not match what he's talking about for free play. We're talking about you're building the skills for free play there, and then we're actually going to let you out. This could look like walking to a local park before you go. Hey, you get a 20-minute head start. I'll be there. We'll see you then. It's a couple blocks away. Like, these are the things we're talking about. You don't have to do any one of these, but that's when we're talking about how do we build resilience in children. It is, in fact, letting them make their own choices, which comes with risk, because they could make the wrong choice, and responsibility, because they have to know that they're the one who's going to bear the outcome of that risk. And it's scary. We could talk about that more, but not today. So thank you all for your attention and your time and this opportunity to share with you. I'll be in the back if you have any more questions. Please. Heavenly Father God, just thank you for the opportunity to talk, Lord, about what it looks like to raise healthy youth in a tech world. God, we praise you for these young people. We ask for the wisdom to raise them up in the way they should go. We ask, God, for hearts that are gentle enough to meet them where they're at as you came into our broken situations, Lord, by sending your son Jesus because you loved us, Lord. And we pray, Lord, that we'd be firm enough to not excuse mistakes, but instead to point them back to you and the only hope that any of us has, which is death in Christ and resurrection to new life, that we might love you, love others, and help people do the same. We ask for the grace and the wisdom to do this well in Jesus' name. Amen.